Welcome to Slightly Offsides, your perfect game plan for all things college and professional football. Hosted by Dre and Mike.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Slightly Offsides, presented by Better Edge. Play the game without getting played. We have all three co-hosts back with us for the first time in 2 weeks. Fellas, how are we doing? And what a week we chose to come back together to full strength. It was a wild, wild week six in college football. A lot of crazy things. How did we feel about this week, boys, before we get into winners and losers?
It was a very interesting week. A lot of tests for a lot of teams. It was cool to see certain teams kind of get tested and tried, and then other teams withstand it, and other teams kind of fall. Like, there were some games there that I would have expected to see a lot more out of certain teams than, you know, what I got to see. And they still pulled it off, but it was an ugly win. There was a lot of ugly wins, but there was also some good proving victories, too. So I think that, you know, going into this following week, at least, again, you're getting more of a view, and I think that this is what you're going to start to see, is you're getting more of a view of what each team's going to be like going into these last half of the swing of the season. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, and teams got a chance, you know, a few conference games under your belt. Maybe you had a big non-con game, but a lot of these teams' identities are kind of we could get a good grasp of what type of team they are, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are. And there's room before the end of the year to improve and, you know, scheme up some new things. But, you know, a lot of teams, you could kind of see where they're going to be at for the rest of the year. You could kind of see how the pecking order in a lot of the conferences are. That being said, though, there's some big games ahead, and especially this weekend. So, it's going to start to get really exciting. I know we've been saying that every week, but, you know, last week was a little bit, you know, less prestigious matchups, and this week will certainly make up for that.
Yeah, Greg, you actually hit that right on the head. We're gonna end this episode with a pretty quick preview into week seven, which figures to be, I think, potentially could be the best week of the season yet. So, yeah, definitely good shout there. And we'll just kind of snowball this right into our winners and losers, fellas. Crazy week again. I'm going to start off with my first winner of this week. And that, for me, is going to be Tennessee. So, Greg and I, we were talking about Tennessee heading into this game. Greg was a little iffy on Tennessee. I was a little further along in my belief in the Vols, and it was good to see Tennessee kind of prove my initial inclinations right. A great win against LSU in the Bayou. That team looks every bit the part. I think the only concern still is defensive strength in terms of total defense, right? So scoring defense is pretty decent, but they're giving up a ton of yards. So as they start to play, I don't know, like Alabama this weekend, potentially maybe those yardage that they give up could turn into more points. So I don't know, but very much looked the part of a potential CFP ruiner this year. And Hendon Hooker, I think, is probably vaulting himself right now into top three of the Heisman considerations. So definitely a big, big week for the Vols.
Yeah, and to add on to that, I mean, the Vols had this game dominated from the jump. They just kept attacking. They got off to a quick start. I believe there was a muffed kick at the beginning. And, you know, even before halftime, they were up by a few scores, and they forced a punt, and they just kept attacking. They tacked on a field goal. And, you know, sometimes you see with these teams, they get off to a 10-0 lead in the first few minutes. They start to, you know, conserve the clock a little bit, run the ball, And that's not the mentality the Vols had. So shout out to them. They came to play, and they're a legit team for sure. Potential college football playoff contender. I don't see that as a stretch anymore, like I did even just last week. Diving into my first team, I'm going to go with Mississippi State. They had a pretty hard matchup against a physical Arkansas team, a team that perhaps I was certainly high on, preseason, throughout the year. And I don't know, they've just let me down time and time again. No KJ Jefferson, kind of a big deal, but they weren't able to establish much on offense. Will Rogers, another great game from him. Mississippi State all of a sudden is 5-1, so putting themselves in a position perhaps for New Year's Six Bowl, maybe even into the playoffs if they can keep it rolling. They have a lot of tests coming up. It's not going to be easy, but they're in pole position to have themselves a great year.
Yeah, that's a great point. My first winner of this week is TCU. I think that they played a team that was on a high horse in Kansas, and they seemed to have been able to beat any given team on any given Saturday. I think that it was good that they came in and handled business at Kansas on such a high note for, the Jayhawks. Like I mentioned, they've been playing well. Didn't they have college football there? College football Saturday. So, they had it was a big day and for TCU to come in and pull that off, I think that just kind of shows that, they've got some steam barreling towards the end of this Big 12 schedule, and they're not a team to snub out of a chance at a Big 12 title this year. Shout out to Max. He really played a really great game. He had 308 yards passing, and Quentin Johnston was awesome for TCU that game as well, just being one of those guys that you could throw it up to and he's going to go get it for you. So shout out to TCU.
Yeah, absolutely. And quick note on that as well, Dre, you mentioned college game day was there. Yeah. That game was the most watched college game day. It had 2.3 million viewers. It was the most watched college game day installment that has occurred ever in the history of college game day before the month of November. So super cool to see, and kind of sad that the Jayhawks couldn't pull it out. They've got another big test this week with Oklahoma, but I definitely love the shout there. TCU looks really good. And how about the Big 12, man? Like Texas, Oklahoma walking out the door, and none of those teams are in competition right now for the Big 12. So it looks like the Big 12 has already moved on. Love to see that. That's great for that conference. I'm going to go with, for my first loser of the week, kind of in that same vein, and I guess this was going to be my second winner, but I'll leave you guys to cover them as one of your winners. I'm going to go with Oklahoma as my big loser of the week. First time that the Sooners have been held scoreless in, I think it was like 33 years or something like that. So that's pretty wild. Like, that's a crazy stat. And for it to happen in this game, I'm sure has to have Sooner Nation just boiling. Like, they've got to be so pissed. And all of a sudden, Oklahoma 0-3 in the Big 12. Brent Venables, the one thing that we knew about Brent Venables, at least we thought we did, was defensive mastermind. And yeah, sure, he doesn't have his guys there, but this is absolutely not what I expected from the Sooners if they were going to be struggling this year, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So definitely big, big losers there. I wouldn't necessarily say it's time to, start getting antsy if you're Venables, but they've got another big game this weekend with Kansas, and if they can't string a couple of wins and at least just get bowl eligible or like 7 wins this year, I mean, that's got to be a big time flop for Venables.
Yeah. I mean, I can't agree more. One of the things that I wanted to note is you would think that as someone coming in is such a defensive mind, they'd be much better on the defensive side of the ball, and they've just been atrocious. I mean, again, you don't expect much out of the Big 12, in terms of defense, but the what I've seen so far, and this is like the worst Oklahoma defense I've ever seen. Like, you know, like typically they have the most aggressive defense in the Big 12. They do. This year they just look horrid, and it shows. I mean, it kind of translates over to the next team I'm going to talk about as one of my losers, and it's sad because I really love this team. I don't even necessarily want to say this team. I really like their quarterback. But Washington, man. You know, I think it's defensive woes that you're watching on for the Huskies this year, and it's like you can't let Arizona State run up 45. Like, it's just – it's unreal. Like, that's unreal, and especially when you have a guy that's like Michael Penix Jr., he could compete. He can put up points on the board if need be, and he can definitely move the ball down the field and get you at least in a scoring position in late chances in a game. And when you've allowed a team to score that many points and given up that many opportunities, you know, it's like you're asking a dude to do a one-man show. So that's my loser for the week. You know, it was a hopeful bounce-back week for Washington. I think they've dropped two in a row now. So it's going to be interesting to see how they recover throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, it looks like the preseason through week four hype train is over for Washington. They're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to get things going again. They came down to earth. This shows the true resiliency of a football team, though. You know, you've had some challenges year one with the new coach. And rest of the season, just see what he's got, see how the team can rally around him. I'm going to go with another Pac-12 team as mine. I'm going to have to go with Stanford. This is their fourth loss in a row. They've dropped to 1-4. And they're on a 10-game losing streak against FBS teams, kind of reverting to mid-2000s form, where they're one of the worst teams in the Power 5. And in this particular game against Oregon State, they were leading by, I believe, 14 points in the fourth quarter, only to give it up and give up a late touchdown pass. You know, you got to think David Shaw's seat's getting warm. He had some good seasons, but that was 5 years ago. You know, Stanford football is not what they were in the 2010s. Might have to start looking for other options to lead their program.
I completely agree. I mean, Shaw has limited time here. I mean, when your program right now was, you know, the underdog by 16.5 to a struggling Notre Dame team this season, like, damn, son. You know, like five to ten years ago, this would have been, you know, 6.5, 7. No way you look at it now, you know, and it's just bad for Stanford. I hope they can recover because it was fun to watch them and watching their little pine tree dance around.
it's crazy that you brought up a struggling Notre Dame team, Dre, because that's actually going to be my second winner of this week. And I think I kind of see it a little bit differently now. Like, I think if you're a Fighting Irish fan, you know, like breathe in with me, relax and breathe out. Okay, everything's gonna be okay, and that's because like this BYU team is no joke, and Notre Dame, like, yeah, okay, obviously nobody like really expected them to win in Columbus to start the year, so that game was kind of already chalked as a loss. And like looking back on, you know, how Ohio State has played since that game, it just makes it even more like apparent that Notre Dame really wasn't going to win that game, even though it was close. Like, they were not going to win that game. So, okay, yeah, the Marshall one sucked. That was completely inexcusable, and the struggle the following week against Cal was also tough.
I was going to
mention, but like,
that.
How many times have we seen that? That's like typical Notre Dame. We've made that joke so many times. Like, yeah. Notre Dame does that shit. The only thing that changed was that they actually lost to Marshall. Other than that, though, since then, they have turned it around, and they've played consistently on both sides of the ball, right? Drew Pine looks like a much better quarterback. I don't know why Taylor Buckner was the starter. Pine is playing way better. The defense has started to get its swagger back, and more so, like, the offense. I mean, when's the last time you can point to two consecutive weeks where Notre Dame scored 28 and 45? Like, that just doesn't happen in Notre Dame. So Tommy Rees has kind of answered the call. I know he was under a lot of scrutiny, and Marcus Freeman as well. I think, you know, Notre Dame obviously still has a tough schedule in front of them, but at this point, this team now looks to me like they could play spoiler, and that's dangerous, right? Like, if you're a Clemson, if you're an SC on their schedule, that's dangerous, because Notre Dame now, they're two losses. They know they can't make the playoffs, but they're starting to pick up steam, and I think this is a team that their ranking at the beginning of the year wasn't that far off. I think when this team is playing at its peak, it's a top 10 team in the country, and right now they're unranked, so they're flying under the radar because of that rough start. I think right now they're starting to click.
Yeah, I'll give that to you for sure. Definitely. I mean, they played a good game this weekend against a really tough BYU team, and I see that as long as they could continue to string together these wins, they could definitely, like you mentioned, be a spoiler team. You know, obviously their hopes for a championship are done for this year, but, you know, you got Clemson left. That's practically, a natty game for you. And then you got USC, which could also be something close to a natty game for you. So, like, they have a lot to look forward to.
And they got Syracuse, too.
They do,
I forgot to mention Syracuse as well. So, they got three top 25 teams ranked as of right now, two inside the top 10. So, I mean, it's definitely there. It's definitely there. And they have Clemson at home as well, which is big. That's a home game.
You got
Greg,
it, Dre.
Did you want to? Oh, okay. All right, sounds good. My next winner is UCLA. Dude, you know, like, it's tough whenever you get a scheduled game like this and you're UCLA, and it's like, dude, you haven't been awesome in years. But now you get an opportunity to, like, win some big football games, and they've actually taken control and done that. I don't know what the energy is in you know, Los Angeles right now for UCLA fans, but it should be high. I mean, beating a Utah team that's really physical, they've showed that they could be – they showed that they should have been, right, as of earlier within this year, they should have been the front runners for the Pac-12 this year, in my opinion. Not so much is it looking that way now. I think you could argue any of maybe four teams that are competitively fighting right now for this. So, you know, you're talking Oregon, you're talking UCLA, Utah would have been in that situation. USC, you've got some good football games in there, and I think that it's a huge win for UCLA to, you know, just kind of stay afloat for the rest of the season. I think that's the main thing for teams that are in the Pac-12, Pac-10, and the Big 12. You know, just stay afloat, dude. Even in the SEC, there are certain teams that are, you know, you're watching teams that were ranked higher earlier in the year, expected to be undefeated or close to undefeated, one or two lost teams already dropped two games. You know, for all the teams that haven't, just stay afloat. And I think that's what UCLA decided to do, and it's great for them.
Yeah. I mean, certainly agree. We heard my playoff prediction, Utah, which has already been busted after this loss. But UCLA does look legit. DTR, QB, playing with the chip on his shoulder. Chip Kelly finally paying dividends for that UCLA program. We all kind of thought he was a relic, had two bad head coaching stints with the Niners and the Eagles in the NFL. But comes back to college, you know, that's kind of a trend that we should be looking at too with Matt Rhule now. He got fired by the Panthers. A lot of teams are going to be swarming to get him. So even though he wasn't the greatest NFL coach, a lot of these coaches that come back to college, even look at guys like Nick Saban, Steve Spurrier was really good at South Carolina after failing in the NFL. These guys, you know, if you can build a program in college football, that skill set never fades. So that's something to keep your eye on. But moving on to my second winner, I'm going to go with Wisconsin, actually. Big bounce back win. They had two humiliating losses in a row, Ohio State and Illinois back-to-back, which led to Paul Christ's dismissal. So they're going with the defensive coordinator, young mastermind Jim Leonard. And it looks like the team responded to him well against Northwestern. You have Graham Mertz, who looked very pedestrian this season, throw for five touchdown passes and around 300 yards, which is something that I never thought was going to happen throughout his career, seeing how he's played this season. But you know, sometimes, you know, you fire your coach mid-season, players kind of throw in the towel, and it's clear that this Wisconsin football team has pretty strong culture, able to bounce back quickly, and, you know, and you could tell that Paul Chryst's firing kind of hurt some of the players. I saw Braylon Allen post something on Twitter. You know, I don't think he agreed with that decision. I feel like Paul Chryst was very well liked by his players, but, you know, I guess it wasn't going to work out. And this is their new era. So players responded well to Jim Leonard. When all of a sudden Wisconsin, you know, upcoming, looking at their schedule, you got Michigan State, who doesn't look that great. They got Purdue, Maryland, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota. If they keep playing like this, you know, they could be in contention. This division's wide open, so it'll be interesting to see how they play for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Two notes I want to add to that, Greg. First and foremost, I think your mention of Matt Rhule in that situation, I think that can't be emphasized enough. And you look at, like, the reverse is true too, right? Like, you're talking about people who fail in the NFL. Like, Urban Meyer could not have possibly had one of the worst, he couldn't have been any worse in the NFL, and yet he's widely regarded as one of the more recent, like, best college football coaches of all time. And so I just think, like that's such an important note, because it's such a different skill set, right? You're managing kids and the whole recruiting aspect of it. Like, it's a very different skill set as a coach, and Rhule has been nothing short of spectacular in college, turning around programs. So, yeah, I think he's going to be really successful wherever he ends up. I've heard on Twitter a lot of people have been talking about, like, Nebraska potentially. Some people have been throwing out Wisconsin as well. I don't really necessarily buy that. And then there's been also some other mentions across, you know, I think ACC and Big 12. But anyways, I think that's worth noting. And then the second thing worth noting is, Dre, if you remember, our good friend CFB Numbers that we had on the pod last year.
Of course.
Excellent newsletter. For those of you that don't know who he is, check him out on Twitter. Add that newsletter. It is, if you're a football fan and you, like, actually give half a crap about understanding the game, there's nobody better to follow than him.
That's a fact.
And he taught me over the year that we've known him, he taught me that the two most important stats to look at when you're really trying to effectively discern how good a QB is expected points added per play and ESPN QBR. Those are, like, the best efficiency in, like, opponent adjusted information that you can have. Last week, Graham Mertz, when you take those two metrics into consideration, Graham Mertz had the best statistical efficiency week of any QB in all of college football, better than CJ Stroud, who was in second. So, great point, Greg. He had a great week. Wisconsin had a great week. I love that winner. My loser for this week is going to be... did anybody talk about Arkansas yet?
Nope.
Okay. All right. I'm going to talk about Arkansas. Because Arkansas was, like, a team that, like, going into the Alabama game, we felt really... Like, I think across the board, like, all three of us, I think, took Arkansas to beat that spread. And I'm pretty sure... Like, all three of us, in the beginning of the year, we had been hyping up Arkansas.
I'm biting my words so hard right now.
Yeah, like, I think we all loved Arkansas. So, I mean, this one, we're all pouring one out for Arkansas. Because, like, this has got to be one of the craziest, like, when you look at the first six games of the year, I'm looking at them right now, like, it is, like, night and day. Well, really, it was day and then night. But, like, it's just – and it's not going to get any easier for them. I don't really know. I don't have answers. Obviously, like, KJ Jefferson is kind of an issue to go down. Hopefully they have him back for the game this week. But that doesn't excuse the A&M game or the Alabama game. And that team just looks like they lost their swagger. Like, they had a lot of swag coming into that A&M game. And ever since then, they look like a shell of themselves. So definitely a big loser there for me this week. They got absolutely shellacked by a Bulldogs team who we talked about this last week. I don't sleep on the Bulldogs. Bulldogs are a great team.
Yeah. That's a great point, Mike. I feel kind of bad to anybody who's listening to me just hype up Arkansas for the past, you know, 6 weeks. For me, a loser for this week, and I don't really think that it's, you know, it's the end-all, be-all for this team. Again, I think we kind of talked about, you know, a team earlier as a winner is, you know, it was Notre Dame, and it's the fact that, you know, you still have an opportunity to be that little sneaky team that, you know, hands somebody an upset and ends the season. My loser, my second loser for the week is LSU. I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, that you lost to Tennessee, but I think it's in the, what fashion did you lose, you know? And I think that was kind of something similar that we saw to Oregon with Georgia earlier in the year. It's like, how do you lose that football? Like, not even how, but it's like how you did it. How bad was it? You know, did you look like you kind of gave up? You know, that type of a situation. And, you know, LSU had a rough game there, and it looked like they, after a certain point, you know, they kind of just laid down. I mean, it started out quick for Tennessee. I mean, they scored 13 in the first quarter and didn't stop on them, you know, kind of leading it up, 23-7 at the half. So, you know, it was just a struggle all the way around for LSU. And, I mean, hopefully they get a, you know, opportunity to clean it up. I mean, this week they have another tough task in Florida, and then after that, you know, it's not going to get any easier, like you were just mentioning, Mike. So, you know, they've got to clean up some things, especially on the defensive side of the ball, if they really want to win some football games here.
Yeah, and I mean, they just looked outcoached the entire game. They did not look prepared for what Tennessee had coming to them, and they couldn't make adjustments either after Tennessee got off to that fast start.
Yeah.
Another thing to note, no Cedric Tillman for Tennessee either. So, you know, the Vols' best receiver, one of the best receivers in the conference, not playing. And, you know, you still can't stop that Tennessee offense. It's not just him that's making plays. I'm going to go with a different SEC West team for my second loser. I'm going to have to go with the Auburn Tigers. This might be the worst Auburn Tigers I've seen. Auburn Tigers team I've seen in my life. Oh, my goodness. They got embarrassed once again by Georgia. I didn't think this game was going to be close. Auburn, you know, going into the season, I was thinking in the back of my mind, like, Auburn might be the worst team in that division, but it's Auburn. There would be some way they'd, you know, string together some wins. They've always went at least 7-5, have been respectable to some extent, and this year it's just hasn't happened at all. The QB throws 13 for like 39. George is pressuring him on nearly every play, and you got a head coach that has he's probably not going to make it to the end of the month, Brian Harsin. So that was a big failure hiring him. A guy that Boise State's been good for this entire century, and they kind of slipped up a little bit under his watch. They weren't bad, you know, he had a good record there, but did he really add much value to that program? So kind of a questionable hire from day one. And I mean,
I think it was the blue turf.
Yeah. I mean, geez. And you're going to have to get this next hire right too. It's never going to get easier in the SEC, all that money down there. All those teams are going to be looking for, you know, good coaches as well. You're going to have to bounce back and get this hire right, get this program turned around.
Yeah, Greg, how many games do you see them winning for the rest of the year? I mean, right now they're sitting at 3-3. They got Ole Miss next week. They got Arkansas, who's still not a snub. I know we were just talking down on them, but they could still be Auburn for sure. Mississippi State, Texas A&M. Western Kentucky and then Alabama. You know, like
maybe one.
Yeah, I'm saying one. I'm really thinking maybe 1-2. Like they might be able to sneak out of Arkansas. Maybe. I doubt it. And then maybe Western Kentucky. Like this is by far one of the worst Auburn teams I've seen in a long time, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at his press conference from yesterday, and the takeaway. He said about Ole Miss was that he said they present many challenges.
They sure do.
That sounds like a coach who's got a game plan right there.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's got a lot of scouting reports to fill out there.
But no, so I think it's a great point, and I think the only reason too, this is a big like not a lot of people know this. And I didn't know this until I read this like 2 days ago. But part of the reason why Brian Harsin hasn't been fired yet is because there's not really anybody to fire him. Like they don't have a sitting AD right now at Auburn. There's no athletic director for Auburn. So like it's one of those things where it's like they haven't fired him because like they have as bad as it is on the field, they have more problems off the field right now in that program. So like Auburn is just like that. That's going to be a rough rest of the year if you're an Auburn Tigers fan. You know, maybe time to start pulling up highlights of Bruce Pearl and the basketball team and start prepping for basketball season, because it's going to only get uglier, I think. So I'm going to lump together my winner and my losers, my last two losers, because I love this. This is going to be good. I just want to say, for what I'm about to say across the board, this is going to make great boilerplate material in a couple of weeks. This is going to be some ignorant shit here, so get ready, boys. Maybe not for my winner as much, but definitely my losers. So my last winner of this week is going to go to Oregon. Okay, so raise your hand, and everybody's hands should go up. If you wrote off Oregon and literally totally forgot that they were even ranked after they got absolutely walked out of the stadium by Georgia week one.
I didn't know. I bet on them every week afterwards, but I'll put my hand up because I kind of like, shitted on them after that. Yeah, I heavily shitted on them.
So I'll
put my hand up for that.
My point is since that game, the lowest amount of points that the Oregon offense has scored has been 41.
And I was very high on the lowest. making sure that offense turned around for sure, because that was a struggle for them.
Yeah, and that's important. And their defense hasn't been spectacular like we thought it would, but there's been improvement. And again, this is a team to me that they're off this week, they get a bye week, and then they get UCLA at home next weekend, and then they finish out with California, Colorado, Washington, so those are three very winnable games, and then Utah at home again, and Oregon State on the road. So I mean, and they only have one loss. Like this, like nobody's talking about Oregon, but like Oregon could still very well be in contention for the playoff come year end. They don't have to play USC. They have to play Utah. They got to get that monkey off their back. But other than that, and they have to play UCLA, but both those games are at home. So, like, my point is like, that's a lot of real estate there for Dan Lanning to work on that defense.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, like, I don't know. Oregon's kind of flying under the radar now. They're sitting right in that sweet spot of, like, 12th in the country. Like, nobody's really talking about them because there's bigger storylines. But if they win against UCLA, you can best believe everybody, like, they're going to fly on everybody's radar again. So I'm trying to get out in front of that in case they do win that UCLA game and shout them out here. But okay, on to the craziness here. And I promise, what is about to come out of my mouth has nothing to do with the fact that I'm an Ohio State fan. It has nothing to do with the fact that I went to Ohio State. We keep it impartial and objective and backed by facts here on this show. So with that being said, my last two losers, and really one, I'm just lumping them together, for this week are Michigan and Georgia. And here's why, okay? First of all, let's go Georgia. Georgia, since they dismantled Oregon, and they looked really good against South Carolina, okay? Since then, they have putzed and muddled their way to three, like, unconvincing wins. Okay? Unconvincing wins. And And Greg, I'm going to kind of disagree with you a little bit in that Auburn game. Like, that score looks good. The game was never in doubt, but like, and yes, they still dominated that game, but if you actually like watch Georgia play, like, that is not what you would expect from, like, they were still making mistakes. They were still like not executing at a high level. Like, it was still not.
What does that
like,
say about Auburn?
Exactly. Like, it's more of an indictment on Auburn than it is on Georgia. And that's kind of my point. Is like, look, this is a Georgia team that we became very accustomed to in previous years, and especially last year. That was a team that week in, week out, like, they didn't take anybody for granted. They were dominant start to finish. They executed every single week. This year, it has been the exact opposite. Like, it feels like they're playing down to the level of their competition week in, week out. And for somebody who's just looking at the scores, like, yeah, they blew out Auburn by 32. Like, yes, they still beat Kent State by 17. And, like, yes, they beat Missouri and they scored 14 points in the fourth quarter to come back and win that game. But my point is like, very un-Georgia-like. And they're starting to get into the meat of their schedule. And they have not looked like the team we expect. So now, it's a lot of confusion, right? Like, Florida, we don't really know what to expect from Florida. But then after Florida, they go Tennessee, they go Mississippi State, and Kentucky. Okay? Like, at the beginning of the year, like, all those are wins. We're just chalking those as wins. Now, I don't know. They could lose two of those games. They could lose to Tennessee and they could lose to Mississippi State with the way that Georgia is playing right now. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but like, it could. They could even lose to Kentucky. That's an away game. Kentucky's going to be amped for that game. So, like, I'm just calling them a loser because, like, you got to be frustrated right now if you're a Georgia fan. Like, this cannot be okay, and it hasn't been okay. Like, you would have thought that this would have been fixed 2 weeks ago, and it hasn't been. That's what's worrisome. After that Kent State game, you would have expected them to come out with a lot more fire against Missouri and Auburn. They haven't done that. Let's see what they do this week against Vanderbilt. If they throw another dud against Vanderbilt, I think you can make a very strong case for Georgia to potentially get moved to, like, fourth. Like the team's just not looking that great right now. Secondly, Michigan, okay? This... Still, we had this conversation like 3 weeks ago about like who were the biggest question marks in college football. I still believe like in the top 25, the entire top 25, Michigan is the biggest question mark in the entire country. And it's because first 3 weeks they played arguably three of the top 10 worst teams in the country. Yes, they blew them out. Yes, they played well. But, like, they played, like, literally, like, three of the top 10 worst teams in the country. They had the worst strength of schedule through 3 weeks. Then they played Maryland at home. And they beat Maryland at home by 7. And that game was not at all. Like, that game was up for grabs the entire game. That was a close game. It was not like Maryland came back and made it look pretty. Like, they easily could have lost that game. And then they gave up 14 points to an Iowa team who doesn't know what the hell double digits looks like on a scoreboard. And they gave up 10 points to an Indiana team who, you know, again, has been quite simply horrible this year. And you look at those scores and it's like, well, yeah, they beat Iowa by 13. They covered in that game. Or, yeah, they covered. It was 11 points red. And they beat Indiana. They missed covering by 1 point. So it was about what Vegas thought they would do. But by watching the game, they haven't been taking care of business the way that you would expect a top five team to do so. So with Penn State this week, you know, the reason why I'm calling them a loser, what I want to see here is I want to see if they can go out and play that game at home. They should be buzzing. That's a top 10 matchup. I want to see how Michigan plays that game. That's going to answer a lot of questions for me, or potentially lead to a lot more questions about whether or not they're deserving of all the accolades they're getting so far. So, yes, I know that I'm probably going to get reamed and people are going to think that that was very biased of me, but my point being, like, you gotta, sometimes it's not just about the score. You gotta look at how the team plays. You gotta get a feel for the team. And right now, it's very questionable to me as to, like, I could not tell you what I what to expect from Michigan in the second half of this year.
That's a that was bold, but you know what? I think it'll fly over. I think it'll fly over for most people. I mean, if they do find some agreeability, and not like it was a bad point. Damn. Following up with that, oh shit. Let me start out with a loser is App State. Damn, returning back to that. Okay, Texas State gave them a handle. Again, this is not pretty for a squad that, like, again, they gave everybody a run for their money. They gave what? North Carolina a run for their money. Who did they upset earlier this year?
A&M.
Yeah, they beat A&M. And then they snuck out of Troy. They lost to JMU. They beat Citadel. And then they lost to Texas State, who really didn't look too hot against Baylor. I mean, for the rest of the season, it's going to be interesting just to see how they kind of finish out with ODU on their schedule. They got Marshall, who beat out, you know, Notre Dame, as we discussed earlier. I think it'll just be interesting to see what happens with App State and just kind of seeing what that looks like. I mean, again, that hype train is shut down. It's sad to see it. But on the bright side, you know, their senior quarterback is still hot. Chase Bryce is still good. So, you know, you can always be happy to watch him play football on a Saturday if you're an App State fan. My winner for the week is, if I'm not mistaken, my friends, I'm not seeing it right here, but did Nebraska – I feel like Nebraska
oh,
won
hell
this
yeah.
past week.
Yeah, put they some did, respect.
They, yeah, okay, so after, hey, yo, okay, Nebraska
yes,
beat Rutgers this week, yes, yes, and they actually have turned it around since the Scott Frost firing in week three. I mean, shit, yeah, they lost one more game after that to an Oklahoma team, and I mean, you know, who's really expected them to win after you get, you know, your coach gets fired, and it looked as bad as it should have looked against Oklahoma, but damn, bro, like, you flip it around and you win two more games back-to-back. You know, totaling out your win record to 3-3 after, you know, struggling last year just to, you know, kind of finish out ball games. They've looked a lot better in the past two in terms of finishing it out. You know, I think that Nebraska still has a good look at a rougher portion of their schedule for the rest of the year. They got Purdue still. They got Illinois still. Michigan and Wisconsin even. You know, Iowa could give them a challenge. I don't know. We'll see. We'll just have to wait and see how good they actually turn out to be as they continue to play some more competition. But shout out to Nebraska. And one last thing, the U is they struggling. Miami, you know, I wanted to throw this in as kind of like if Mike was going to do two losers. You know, Miami has been struggling. Mario Cristobal has got to be a little bit more just, you know, aggressive as a head coach. I feel like he's just very relaxed right now in terms of what he's looking for, and I know it's a rebuilding year. I think it's sad that he said he knew this was going to be a tough challenge as a rebuilding year as a 7-5 team, and you know, you got some great players that came in this year. I think that, you know, that type of mindset as a coach, and you know, your players aren't already, you know, they've dropped a couple of ball games this year within their own hands. You know, after you lose a game, that's kind of on you, in my opinion, after watching that Miami game. Hell, you know, you should take a little bit more responsibility and accountability for that. So, I just, you know, it was interesting. I was hoping that Miami would have been, you know, a much better program this year. There was a lot of talks of that. I didn't buy it at the beginning of the year. I started to buy it. I bet on a couple of games on Miami and have regretted it greatly on the games that I have betted on. But, you know, hey, I hope that, you know, they could turn that program around.
Hey, all I'm going to say, fellas, the dream is still alive. Nebraska currently tied for first in the Big Ten West.
Damn. Damn.
Dream is still alive.
Shout out
to Nebraska.
It's
not how we drew it up. Scott Frost ain't going to be along for the ride. But dream's
they're
still
playing,
alive.
They're playing 5D chess, trying to make us think they weren't contenders.
Yeah, you know, just how I love to see it. Keep it up, Cornhuskers. Like, if you know what, actually, Right here. I'm going to say it right here.
Oh, my God.
If Nebraska – No. I'm not going to say it with confidence. I'm just going to say, if Nebraska wins the Big Ten West and proves me right for my preseason craziness, I will buy one of those, like, freaking corn heads that they have.
I will, too, bro.
And I'll wear it for our conference championship week episode if they do it. So, come on, Cornhuskers.
That'll be really funny.
It's the year of if you have TikTok, you understand it's the year of corn. So it's
con.
It's in the stars.
Yeah, that's just wild. Damn,
man, I don't know if I could top that. last, I'm gonna lump these together too. Real quick, last winner of the week, I'm gonna show some respect to James Madison. You know, undefeated. I think they cracked the top 25 as well. I remember earlier this year they played App State, you know, off the heels of their big upset win over A&M. I was like, you know, they've been really good in FCS play. They've won a title recently, you know, always in the top 5, top 10 in the FCS. But transitioning to the FBS takes time. Most teams, you know, in recent years, you got teams like App State, Liberty. It takes a few years to start recruiting at that FBS level. Big strategy for FCS teams is to take on transfers from FBS players that didn't really have a chance to play. And now it's a little bit different. You're coming in, you're competing against teams with that FBS talent. They're playing in the Sun Belt this year. So that's a huge accomplishment for them to be ranked in year one, you know, going to make a bowl game. There's a lot to be excited for, you know, if you're from – I have a few friends that go there or went there. I can only imagine what the environment's like. So shout out to the Dukes. And then for my loser, I'm going to have to go with Iowa. This will be the last time I pick Iowa this year, but oh, my God.
We need to get a shirt, Greg, that says I hate Iowa.
They lose 9-6 against Illinois. Illinois throws 116 passing yards in that game. like, what more can you say? If Wisconsin fires their coach for basically the same exact reason, I don't understand what's keeping Kirk Ferentz at a job. It's very obvious that he's done this for 20 years. He's one of the longest tenured coaches in college football. He has not modernized his team in the slightest. And even like an Illinois team that plays pretty similar style, you know, very physical, Brett Bielema coached at Wisconsin prior to coming to Illinois, you know, recruiting physical linemen. Focusing on the run, same with defense, focusing on the trenches there. Year one or year two, right? Yeah, year two of his tenure, they're 5-1. They're, you know, they're in the driver's seat for the West. They got some challenges coming up, but how can a guy come into a school that's, you know, been worse for the past 20 years and beat you at your own game? I think that says something. I'm gonna stop lashing out at you guys, but just something to think about as you go through the rest of the year, watching your team rush for like 2 yards a carry.
2 yards in a cloud of dust, man. That's Big Ten football right there, Big Ten West. Greg, on your point for James Madison currently has the second, like the number two defense in the country in terms of total defense, yardage wise, and in terms of yards per play, they're number 5 in the country. So that defense is no joke for the Dukes.
Yeah, sure is. And I mean, I think it all comes down to coaching. You come into year one, making the jump. You have the same, you know, the same roster in place. You have the same schemes. It's evident that, you know, they're scheming much better than their Sun Belt opponents.
Dude, if they go undefeated and they win the Fun Belt, like, toss them in the New Year's Six. Why not? Like, why not, man? Like, why not? Okay, and then before we wrap this episode up real quick, I just want to give like a real big like you suck, like targeted you suck outside of what we normally do to Jimbo Fisher. Like, you deserve to get fired based on that play call at the 2 yard line. That was up there, like that was up there with like the Seahawks passing on first and goal when you have Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl. That to me was like that boneheaded. Like, I cannot believe I witnessed that shit. Jimbo Fisher, like, you're like, I'm glad and you should be glad that iPhones don't break easy, or else you'd be on the hook for a new phone for me, because I sent my shit after that play. That was ridiculous.
I mean, this isn't the first time we've watched him kind of fumble the bag at the end of the game either. So it's like, damn, bro, like,
It was horrible.
And even then, it's like they got in a dogfight with Arkansas, who right now doesn't look like half the Arkansas team that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Nah, so, like, but I just wanted to single him out and, like, man, wouldn't pay that guy 5 cents to be my coach if he comes up with plays like that. And they're paying him a whole lot of hell more.
And the players are actually producing for once.
Yeah, damn. That catch by Evan Stewart.
Ooh. Damn, son. And then you get bad coaching to blow you a game like Alabama. Like,
that was
shit.
Unreal.
Same thing. Texas happened. I wonder if it's just Nick Saban getting in their heads just like from the backside, you know, just like really sneaking in there. Because Texas had a similar problem, too.
Yeah, I don't
just blew that Alabama game at the end of the game. What were you going to say, Greg?
I was thinking kind of the same thing. You know, especially all that transpired in the offseason. I said it last week. I thought Bama was going to beat the brakes off of them. You know, Saban's going to be relentless. And, you know, sometimes against these great coaches, you try to make illogical plays so you could fool the defense. And that's just not how you win games.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's now, like, again, this is we've ran up against this problem twice against the Alabama team this year, where it seemed like coaches were trying to outwit or outcoach a guy that I think that if you just played the ball game that you've been playing for the whole game that's kept you in it, keep it pretty straightforward, you're winning that football game.
Bro, but, like, you know, just like.
Yeah.
Dude.
Shit.
Dre, was it you? I was having a conversation with somebody like 2 weeks ago where it's like I might have been at work, but like, last thought on this is like, they really do need to start letting these coaches like play video games for like game management and like understanding of like, hey, how far is me being too cute versus me just doing what I know works? Like, it doesn't, at a certain point, it doesn't matter if they know what you're going to do. If you can still execute.
Yeah.
Like, Alabama, how many times have we seen Alabama at the 2 yard line? And it's like, they got like, they're running back, and it's like, oh, like think about when they had Derrick Henry, right? Or like when they had like Najee Harris, and they were at the 2 yard line. Like, everybody and their mother knew Najee Harris getting the ball.
Yeah.
Did it change? Did it matter?
Doesn't matter.
No, doesn't matter, because they can still execute. Like, oh my God.
Yeah,
it's just like, wow, bro. It's, again, not going to sit here and act like I know literally anything, but those are times that makes you think like, wow, like,
if you gave me that job, I'd be making worth be making.
I'd do everything else horrible, but I'd at least get that play call. Right. Like, I would suck at everything else, but at least I'd get that play call. Right.
Damn.
But, all right, yeah, that kind of wraps up the episode. I think that's a pretty good way to end this week's episode up. We have a really good preview upcoming. We'll just do it with our picks and our predictions in week 7. Going to be probably, like I said, the best week of football to date. I think it's 5 top 25 matchups, so going to be a really good one. Thanks again for listening to Slightly Offsides. We will catch you next week breaking down what looks to be the best week of the college football season yet to come in week 7, and talking about winners and losers yet again. Thanks for catching our content, and continue to watch out for us on all platforms. Appreciate it, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to Slightly Offsides. We'll catch you next time.